A week ago Wednesday, we had the baccalaureate service for the high school graduates, and I got to sit up on the little stage with the other pastor types, and we had all the graduates sitting in front of us, and then a few scattered parents and grandparents in the bleachers. And I wasn't preaching, so that was fine. I was just there to say a little prayer. But as I was sitting there looking at all these 18-year-olds, I thought, what would you say to them if you were preaching? And I think part of it, too, is it's a question of what would you say to yourself when you were 18 years old, if you could. You could turn back the clock and talk to yourself when you were 18. What might you say to them? And I guess when I was looking at this group, I was thinking mostly of the goals they had in their mind and in their hearts. Like, what is the goal of their life? What are they seeking to do? And even if it's a couple hundred kids with very different lives, very different homes, they probably all have about the same handful of goals, right? They want to go to college or go straight into getting a good job, right? Which boils down to you're going to need money, you're going to need support. So there's the college, the job, money. And then probably a lot of them want to find a spouse, right? Whether they're going to get married or not, they want a spouse. So this girl wants to get married to this guy, and this guy wants to get married to this girl, and this girl wants to get married to this girl, and everybody has a spouse they're seeking somewhere in their lives. And then mostly I think the guys, you know, they want a vehicle, right? They want the pickup truck, the F-35 million with the 30-inch wheels that you need to get into an elevator to get up into it, just so they can drive over other cars if they want to. And so they want the money, the job, spouse, vehicle, you know, house, right? Some people want a house. It's nice to have somewhere to sleep. It's not a cardboard box. Watch HDTV. They get the house they have. They want to turn it into the house they want. And so everybody has these different goals in their lives. But the catch is the goals we have at the end of our lives are in no way similar to the goals we have earlier in our lives. I kind of feel like interviewing Hattie on this one, but I'm not. I'll let you sit. But, you know, in my job, I've seen a lot of people in the hospital. I've seen a lot of people on their deathbed. And here's what has not happened. I've never, ever, ever had someone ask me to go and get out their bank statement and set it out on that little plastic cart table thing so they could look at their bank statement one more time before they go. And I've never had somebody give me their car keys and go wax their car and park it outside the hospital window so they could just look at it and smile as they die. And I've never had somebody go to their wallet and fish out a business card so they could look at their job title or get one of those corny little plaques that says you worked at the same place for 20 years and we appreciate you so much. We spent $9 on this plaque. And, you know, thank you. Prop it up on the little hospital cart next to the Jell-O. Never once. When people are going to go, they're only concerned about two things. Making sure they can say what they need to their loved ones and getting ready to meet their maker. If they've hurt somebody, if they need to say some I'm sorry's, if they need to say some I love you's, they need to take care of their loved ones. And they need to be ready to stand in front of the Lord and be judged and be able to do that. And the catch is, most of our lives our goals don't line up with where they are near the end of our lives. In Matthew 25, Jesus is giving another one of his parables, and he explains this group has one of two outcomes. To one, he says this, "Well done, good and trustworthy servant. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." So imagine, imagine you're at St. Mark's Hospital. You're dying. You close your eyes. This is it. And here's what you hear. "Well done, good and trustworthy servant. Enter into the joy of your master." I mean, is there anything else you'd want to hear? But Jesus puts out another scenario as well. As soon as I can find it. "You wicked and lazy slave. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Okay, you're at St. Mark's. You kick the bucket. Would there be anything worse to hear than that? Wicked and lazy, right? Wicked is the opposite of good. Anytime you had an opportunity to do good, you didn't. Lazy, you knew there was a lot of great things you could do, but you didn't. I was thinking of Olympians. It's not that time of year, but when we get to see the Olympian athletes on TV, we get to see somebody run for 30 seconds or do a couple jumps off a diving board, right? We only see them for a moment. But we know behind that moment, there's this huge stretch of time called training, right? Somebody who's going to run in the Olympics, this is not their first time running. And this is not their first year running. And it's probably not their first decade of running. But if somebody's going to run for 30 seconds in the Olympics, chances are high that they've spent 8 hours a day for 10, 20 years training. And it affected every decision they ever made in their lives. When their friends invited them out to dinner and everybody's getting chicken fried steak, these poor schmucks had to order a chicken breast and some broccoli with no salt and no cheese. And that's what they got to eat. And when their friends were going out to the bar and getting whatever, they would get a water. And when their friends were going to go out to a movie, they had to say no because they'd go to the gym. Their entire life revolved around this training because they had one goal. And when they get to that goal, when we see them on TV and they stand on the little platform and somebody puts the gold medal around their neck and it's playing the Star Spangled Banner, they cry like a baby. Why? Because all those times eating those stupid chicken breasts and all those times sitting alone in the gym, all those times making all those decisions, it was not for naught. It was not for naught. Because it all paid off in that one moment. The goal of the Christian life is when we kick the bucket to be able to hear those words, "Well done, good and trustworthy servant, enter into the joy of your master." All these Sunday mornings, Sunday school, Bible class, vacation Bible school, home devotions, whatever you're doing, it's all in response to what Jesus has done for us, but it's all with one goal, be able to hear those words at the end of it all. And the challenge when you think of those high school graduates is that a lot of the Christian graduates have the exact same goal as everyone else. If you pulled out the Christian kids and surveyed them on their goals, and you took the other kids and put them on their goals, they're the exact same thing. And something is wrong when a Christian life makes sense to someone who's not a believer. When I was a kid, I I was blessed to have a mentor kind of keep an eye out for me. There's no way he'd ever listen to the podcast, so I can say some stuff. He's in his 90s as well. So I guess he was in his 70s when I met him. But he's pretty much the exact opposite of cool. Okay? He's from Norway. He's a big dude. Thick Norwegian accent. Loves him some pleated khakis with soup stains all over it. There's a lot at which you would say, this person would not be a good mentor for a teenager. But he was. Why? Because I knew he cared about me. That was it. So once a year, my family would have dinner with him and his wife. And maybe once a year, he'd write me a letter. And the letter had Bible verses in it and had some quotes in it. But most importantly, it pushed down my throat a goal that was different than everybody else had. And included in one of those letters was a quote from a commencement speech. I know I've shared it a couple times in sermons. See if I can get it now. You know, do not seek for wealth or money or success, for one day you will meet someone who has all these things, and you will see how poor they are. Interesting quote to give to a 14-year-old boy. But here's one more line I'll close with, since it's time to eat cake. Also from him. I might wish you wealth, or I might wish you health, or that good fortune would caress you. But wealth might bring sorrow. Good health could fail tomorrow. So I'll simply say, God bless you.